Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. One of the primary goals in MTSU's academic master plan is the internationalization of the campus, which is to say MTSU is a citizen of the world, an educational and academic citizen of the world, with students coming here from all over the globe and our students going to various places around the globe for their own study abroad purposes and to enrich their career and educational experiences. For the first time in MTSU's history, we have a Vice Provost for International Affairs. He's Dr. David Schmidt, and we're going to talk about the future of MTSU vis-a-vis international programs, study abroad, and the entire gamut. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Schmidt.
Thank you very much.
I've been publicizing international activities on campus for some time before you arrived here, and it always seemed that international activities were scattered over various parts of the bureaucracy, but they were not under one umbrella and under one unique vision, under one unique drive, one unique mission. But this has all changed with your arrival. Tell us how your coming here and the reorganization will help to focus international education.
Well, I think precisely as you noted, there's always been a myriad of really amazing international and global activities on campus here at MTSU. The thrust of it really comes from the president and the provost saying that, yes, there should be some sort of lightning rod or one office to kind of organize and balance these activities and, of course, to further foster them. And that has been my position, which I was lucky enough to get. And the restructuring of something called international affairs, which takes up really three different things, and many of them that you mentioned in your introduction, and that is international students and scholars coming to MTSU, coming to the Murfreesboro area, our students and scholars, faculty administrators going overseas, becoming enriched, and of course that broad encompassing enrichment and globalization of the campus. How does MTSU become a global campus?
How does an institution like MTSU, which is a publicly funded institution for the most part, although it receives private donations, of course, provide a quality international educational scope in times of budget cuts and a recessed economy?
I think it does it by focusing and saying that this is a priority, which MTSU certainly has done. Institutions of higher education by their very nature are global. And I think having recognized that, which MTSU has done, you see that for years they've been global, they've been international. But I think the thing that I'm really most pleased with is that they want to take it a step further. And especially in these economic times when a lot of schools, you know, I come from California, and the UC and CSU systems have just been drastically gutted when it comes to global and international education. Tennessee, it appears, is doing just the opposite. They're saying that, look, it is a disservice to say to a student who comes from Smyrna or Shelbyville or Murfreesboro that we're not going to give them the best education possible to make them competitive global citizens. And that's what it appears MTSU is doing. And so I'm very proud and pleased to be part of that.
One of the ways in which MTSU is doing just that is through partnerships with institutions of higher learning in other countries, some of which were established before you got here through professors' personal connections overseas. Talk to us a little bit about those partnerships, those relationships, those memoranda of understanding that have been signed by the presidents of all of those institutions, and what they portend for MTSU students and faculty.
Well, when I arrived, I asked to have a look at all of the memorandum of understanding that we've had over the last few years, and I found a few that were dust covered and that were not very active, and I found some that were very active and could even become more active. We have some strong partnerships in China. We have some new partnerships on the horizon in Turkey, and of course we have these kind of personalized MOUs from faculty who have been doing these things for many years. And it's my job as the vice provost then to foster those, to support them, to make sure that these do not collect dust, that we're sending students to these sister schools, we're receiving students from these sister schools, that we have it's not just a one-on-one, one professor with one professor, but it's more institutionalized as an exchange. I think they're extremely beneficial when you look at faculty research sharing, methodologies of pedagogies in the classroom, even things that hopefully in the future we can do with sister schools where we can share classroom instruction, that we could, in real-time technology, have discussions between one class here in Murfreesboro and one class in Beijing or Zurich or Moscow or Cape Town. I mean, that's the future of global education.
How does MTSU decide which countries and which institutions we should partner with and or how we put ourselves in a position to be chosen?
Well, because we are a large public school, we receive a lot of offers all of the time. And I think part of my job will be to kind of wean through those offers and say, which one benefits MTSU? And that's really going to be the answer, because back to what you had mentioned, these are tough economic times. We can't just say yes to everyone. So we have to look at a partnership and make sure that it's a fair partnership. We obviously feel we know we have an awful lot to offer a partner, but we want to make sure that we're able to get something out of this partnership to offer our students. How does it affect our students in the classroom, our faculty who are teaching those students in the classroom? And of course, you want to make sure that geographically you're spread throughout the world, that you're looking at different continents that can benefit our students, and also that it plays into the expertise of our faculty. I mean, that's really one of the key crux of these relationships.
How does one assess the academic quality of an institution of higher learning overseas, given different cultural norms, different governmental setups? How does one separate the Brazilian Yale from the Brazilian podunk U, so to speak?
Well, there are internal rankings nationally, so that if you're looking at a country that I'm very familiar with, Japan, you kind of know the ranking as far as the most prestigious private school, the most prestigious public school. And even within that framework, because when you look at the domestic rankings here, we're not a small private school on the East Coast. We have to look for someone who is on par with us as far as a larger state school that offers as many majors and diverse majors as we do. I come from a school in California that was rather small and offered only 80 majors. We offer more than 140 majors and programs here at MTSU. So as far as getting the most bang for our buck, as far as academic quality and a great relationship, we're looking for someone who is a university that is, it doesn't have to be public. It can be a private school overseas, but someone that is similar to being very student-centered, focusing on the student and the classroom and teaching, as well as research.
Would it behoove MTSU to stick with developing relationships or partnerships with institutions with whom we share the most curriculum similarities, or would international relationships potentially help MTSU and the partner institution to expand their curricula?
I think it's a little of both. I mean, obviously we're going to look at these longstanding relationships that we've had and looking at ways to strengthen them and take them to the next level. But I think at least part of my vision is to introduce new partners that that we can assist and that we can challenge our students in assisting. And I'll give you a perfect example. One of our long-standing partners is Fukushima University in Japan. And as everyone knows, Fukushima and the country of Japan recently had a terrible natural disaster.
And an unnatural disaster on top of it.
Exactly. And what I've asked three faculty members to do is to consider taking our students there next May and June. And so we wrote to Fukushima University, and they said, most certainly, we would welcome them. We're looking at kickstarting this relationship. And we want our students, while they're there, to do a service learning component. But we also want it to be a learning component. So we're looking at reconstructing a similar situation, at least theoretically, prior to arriving there. If students are proposed or they're given an issue saying, what if this happened to Murfreesboro? What if this happened to New York City or Los Angeles or Seattle? Where would you start rebuilding, restoration? Would you do it right? I mean, would you look at elementary schools and they would be the first thing? Would it be hospitals? How would you recreate a city? And then they're going to see how Fukushima actually did it, and they're going to hopefully assist, because we know within a year, year and a half of having that happened, it's not going to be all done. So our partners over in Fukushima have agreed to welcome our students and to propose those challenges to them.
When might this come to pass?
This is hopefully going to take place in May of next year.
But not all the I's have been dotted and T's have been crossed yet.
No, but they have agreed to do it, and the faculty members that I've asked to look into it have all been enthusiastically agreeable.
Tell mommies and daddies whether their children would be safe in going to Fukushima under the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken with the Fukushima counterparts and asked, you know, safety, of course, is one of our biggest concerns, and they've assured us that at this point there will be no problem. I mean, as far as radiation, no issue whatsoever. As far as just the general safety of our students going abroad anywhere, we have an amazingly precise critical response protocol in place. So our students are very well taken care of overseas.
What sort of shape is the city of Fukushima in, or the entire prefecture for that matter, with regard to public health and hygiene in the aftermath of the tsunami?
Well, there has been a slow, and it's very hard for me to speak of just because I haven't been there quite a while, and
although you have lived in Japan extensively, and you speak Japanese fluently, you know a lot about Japan.
I do, and however, everything I'm receiving now is just reports from our partners and from colleagues of mine over there. But it is in the rebuilding phase. I can say that for most of my colleagues in Japan, they're one of the, I guess, you could say good or bad results of this is that there is now a increased distrust of the government, that a lot of they're asking for more transparency. In fact, I wouldn't say they're asking for it. They're demanding it. And I think that in the end will be seen as a good thing, because there was a hint of a cover up in a lot of these things. So I guess I'm not trying to sidestep your question, but I'm saying I guess the truth has yet to be really seen as far as how bad it is. They're being very cautious in letting people back into the immediate areas and making sure that hygiene and sanitation and safety as far as just the construction of the buildings and the infrastructure is the most important thing at that time. So.
What criteria does the university take into consideration in determining which countries would be safe for study abroad? Now, some are obvious in one extreme, Canada. Some are obvious in the other extreme, Afghanistan. But what about those countries that have some internal turmoil, but there are some gray areas where it's a little bit difficult to judge?
Well, and because I've just celebrated my fourth month at being here at MTSU, I can tell you I'm not 100% familiar with any of the protocols for if a student wants to go to a country that is not on our approved travel list. And our approved travel list is rather strict. I'll say that it's extremely conservative here at MTSU. Countries that have a State Department travel advisory, students are not allowed to go to. But with that said, I, and in my previous positions, have allowed students who've been very insistent on going to specific countries where there is a travel advisory to petition for those things. But what we've done in those instances is we've asked for parental involvement, that the parents are knowing exactly what's going on, that we work with legal counsel to make sure that if the student is insistent upon going to those areas, that he or she has to sign a waiver saying that the university is not liable for any harm that may come to them. And, of course, we would make them go through a full semester of kind of cross-cultural training, getting them ready. Mm-hmm. But before I would make any of those decisions, I would also have an advisory committee that would either support or go against having the student go to one of those. You know, as parents, we tend to be somewhat conservative, and we'd like our students to go abroad, but to safe places. But we also remember when we were 18 to 22, and we felt that sometimes London isn't as challenging as Phnom Penh or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I can empathize.
You don't get too many requests for Pyongyang.
No, we don't. But we might. So.
If a professor has what he or she thinks is a great idea for a research project that he or she would like to engage in overseas, what is the process of obtaining funding and university approval? What does that professor have to do?
There is a committee called the IEEC where faculty and students alike can apply for additional funds to go overseas to support, number one, for students, their education abroad programs. And that is for the semester, the full year, the summer, the short-term faculty-led excursion, and for faculty to ask for money to support a presentation at a conference in Moscow or to do some research in Kuala Lumpur or something like that. It's well-staffed and by faculty members and administrators alike, and so there is a really proper vetting. But one thing I will say that is fantastic about MTSU is that there is that funding in place for faculty to do that. So when I started looking for a new position and I thought, wow, you actually have a chunk of funding that the administration has set aside for faculty to pursue international and global research. That's pretty cutting edge. I mean, like I said, when other states are just gutting and cutting at these global budgets on campus, MTSU's is extremely healthy.
Now let's talk about international students who come here and avail themselves of our facilities. From what countries do they hail? And are there any new countries this time around that were not represented in the past?
Well, you know, I come from a very traditional background of international student recruitment where most universities will kind of follow the wagging tail of we look at where economies are doing well and then we go in there and we recruit. And right now you'll see a lot of universities are flocking to China, and with good reason. The economy is doing well. In the 80s, they all flocked to Japan, and then they flocked to South Korea. We have a international student body that is very reflective of most universities, but one of the mandates that I've received is to diversify that. And so we do have a strategy in place, which is going to begin in September, where we're actually putting boots on the ground and we're doing a whole new branding of MTSU and outreach to actually go out to meet the students, the young 17, 18-year-old student and their parents, and recruit them to MTSU. We want to have a more vibrant international student body and, in the long term, a more diverse and expansive alumni base. I mean, that's what we're looking at perhaps 15, 20 years from now, to have an international alumni base that are proud Raiders overseas and that will give back to the institution and that will send their children here. I mean, that's the long-term goal that I have in place. So we're looking at recruiting from, first and foremost, of course, Asia, all the way from Seoul down to Kuala Lumpur. Secondly, we're looking at hitting a few of the places in the Middle East and selectively in Europe. And then the third leg will be looking at Latin America and South America. In the spring, we will recruit in the Middle East, and we have a very strong base already in the Middle East, in particular with Saudi Arabia. We have a large number of Saudi Arabian students in Murfreesboro and at MTSU. So we're looking at covering most of the globe. And, of course, we have some fantastic coaches here who recruit heavily from Africa, which a lot of universities just kind of skip over that continent. So I was very pleased to find a great group of African students here on campus.
Why did they skip Africa? Do they figure there's just no money there?
Precisely. I mean, to be very frank with you, yes. A lot of admissions folks or recruitment specialists will tell you, you know, unless you hit the certain market, and of course, depending upon the cost of your university, I can guarantee you that most East Coast private schools will not go to Africa unless it's to a country where the government sponsors the scholarships. And a perfect example of that will be several years ago, Libya decided that they would designate specific scholarships for students to attend universities in the United States. And of course, many universities then flocked to Libya to be first in line to get those scholarships.
Will this outreach involve the establishment of recruitment offices overseas and the hiring of recruitment officers?
At this point, no. We're going to try to do it all amongst ourselves. Maybe long term we could do that, but I'm not a huge advocate of that at this time because it ties us too much into one location. And I really want to kind of brand and get the word out about MTSU and then perhaps assess how well we've done after a year.
But our faculty certainly are not without international contacts because of the conferences they've gone to and the colleagues that they've met and with whom they've established relationships.
Precisely. And I think many of them are looking for materials to take overseas with them. You cannot use the same materials that you use to recruit students from Tennessee or Arkansas or wherever in the United States that you use when you travel overseas. You're looking at a totally different audience, and oftentimes the decision makers are first and foremost the parents.
And some things can get lost in the translation.
Precisely. And there's specific things that they look for. And you really won't know this unless you've had a tremendous amount of experience traveling and interacting with the parents, the cultures, the agents, the high school counselors, who are very, very powerful when it comes to helping students make decisions. And looking into different markets, I think, is something that's going to be new for MTSU. I think it's extremely exciting for me to be part of this, and I really am enthusiastic about it.
If you are traveling abroad and you don't understand the culture of that country and the etiquette and the protocol, you can make a fool of yourself in a big hurry.
Not only a fool of yourself, but the fact that, especially in specific situations, you're not seen as yourself, but rather a representative of that university. And it can give a university a black eye, a terrible black eye, one that is extremely difficult to recover from. So, there are certain countries that I'm extremely comfortable traveling in, and I'll take the lead on those. And then there are ones where I know I'm out of my league, and hopefully I'm wise enough to know that I'm not just going to do that. I'm either going to defer to one of our faculty, a staff member, or in some cases, our alumni are going to be great folks that we're going to reach out to and ask to help, spread the word of MTSU. We have a great product here.
Talk a little bit about the atmosphere on campus for an international student in terms of a comfort zone, a level of tolerance. Recently, as you know, the city of Murfreesboro has received international attention, much of it negative, for things that have happened in the city. During that time, the campus itself seems to have been an island of relative peace and decency and respect for human beings, regardless of their religion, their culture, their dress, and whatever nationality they happen to be.
Well, it's a good time for me to talk about this because, 4 months ago, my wife and I loaded up the car with the cat and the dog and came from California, which to many people might be a foreign country. When we arrived in Murfreesboro, I will say this, the people, not just on campus, but in general, in the whole county, the city, extremely friendly and welcoming.
Southern hospitality.
Yeah, and I have never lived in the South. I have not traveled much in the South. So for us, it was extremely refreshing. Very refreshing to see this, to have, while I'm pumping gas, someone just start talking to me, genuinely interested in a conversation with me. We love it. And I think, now that I'm so enthusiastic about it, it helps me become someone as far as a better representative of the university going off and talking about Murfreesboro and what these people are going to encounter when they come to campus. I think that people are genuinely friendly and helpful on campus and in Murfreesboro. And so for me, half the battle is won because I can say in all honesty to students and parents overseas when I meet them that you're going to come to a really wonderful place. Certainly Murfreesboro, in fact, it was one of the first times I had heard of Murfreesboro, was I had heard on it in one of the morning national shows about the recent controversy. But, having watched my neighbors and there is diversity here in Murfreesboro. At least it's being confronted. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that, you know, in some of the cities that I've lived in California, it wasn't being confronted. We lived in segregated neighborhoods, and it just wasn't one of these things we talked about. Mm-hmm. So,
there's another situation with international students that some friends of mine and I on campus have been concerned with for some time. And this is something I told to you about when you first came. And I interviewed you for a story I was writing about you, and that is when international students come to an American campus, frequently they are scraping to get from pillar to post. Now, all college students are. There's nothing unusual about that. However, when you're also trying to feel comfortable in a new and different culture, and you have little emergencies like the car won't start, or you need a car, or you need a coat for the winter, or little bitty things that happen, or not so little bitty things like, you know, maybe you can afford car insurance to stay legal, but you don't have health insurance, or you don't have enough health insurance to pay for the ER if something should happen for you. These little unexpected expenses that happen in life, they can't run home to mommy and daddy. Mommy and daddy are too far away. This happens at all campuses. This is not unique to MTSU whatsoever. What kind of mechanism is there to help the international students and provide them some guidance in dealing with the little unexpected emergencies of life while they're over here?
It's a great question, and I think it kind of reckons back to the first thing we started talking about, and that was really my position, that I'm to be this kind of lightning rod for things that are international and global on campus. And I knew that, you know, I came to campus at really a great time. I came here on April 1st, which gives me the whole summer to prepare for the fall. We will be welcoming exchange students, matriculating undergraduates and graduates on the 22nd of August. I mean, very soon they'll be coming to campus. I've been preparing for the last 4 months and will prepare for the next 3 weeks to get ready for that first arrival of when those students meet us. And it's not just me and my staff. It's the entire university. I mean, there's this real amazing interest in getting this orientation and getting this welcome to those students right. And my philosophy is first impressions are everything. If the student 4 years from now graduates and says, you know, David, I remember that day I showed up in Murfreesboro and you were there and you were smiling and your staff was so helpful, and you see how they've grown, but that first impression is really a lasting impression for the rest of their lives. We're going to do it right, and we're going to make sure that while we may not have the answer that day when the student asks us a question, we will know who to direct them to, and we're not going to give them the runaround. I mean, it's not a different philosophy, because people here are always friendly, but we're going to try, at least in my position, to connect the dots, to bring everyone to the table.
People have always been compassionate. There's just been a need for a way to organize the compassion.
Right. There's all these different wonderful musicians in different areas of the campus. I'm going to be the maestro who brings them all into the same room and just conducts.
Yes.
So I hope.
this is not giving the kids some punch and cookies and some literature and saying, okay, pal, you're on your own, and throwing them out the door. This is a real welcome.
This is a real welcome that gives them, first and foremost, the skills to live. So we're helping them with the banks and all of the other little things so that they have the right tools on the is it the 27th we start class? I think it is.
Oh, boy.
I think
too soon.
It's to give them all of the tools so that they can rest assured that their life is going as planned and they can do what they came here to do, and that is to study, to be a student. We already know for the student who comes from Nashville, you know, and says goodbye to their mother and father that Saturday, it's a very emotional thing. But they can go home on the weekend. So imagine when your family is 3,000-4,000 miles away, and it's a couple plane ride, and how many thousands of dollars for that plane ticket. So it's a very emotional thing. They're in a new language. They're continually processing. There are different ways of handling the banks. They want to drive. And there's just all these kind of impediments. I have an open door policy. If a bank says, yeah, we're going to open an account for you, but you need a Social Security card number, they're going to come to me and I'll take care of it for them. I'm not going to give them a social security number, but I'm going to call the bank and tell them it's an international student. They can do it without. But we have some great local banks who already know that, so we're working with them in advance.
So local partnerships are just as important as international partnerships.
Correct. Yes.
Dr. David Schmidt, Vice Provost for International Affairs at MTSU, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.